From bureaus worldwide, this is FSA.
Ah, Rebecca Foster. It's been ages and ages and ages. You must know that I'm missing our K.
Fabulous.
It's all good.
Yeah, missing our K. How you doing? It's Wednesday, December 23rd, 2020. Last show of the year, eh? Let's make it a good one. Thanks for joining me.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, the last Richie Allen radio show proper of 2020. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you're in good form. I'm in pretty good form. Spiro Skouras will join me a little bit later on this hour of activist post fame, of course, and the Spiro Skouras even, YouTube channel, which is a brilliant YouTube channel. He's a good lad, is Spiro. Recently, in fact, a couple of days ago, Twitter deleted his account. I want to talk about that. You might think, oh, Richie, Twitter, it's doing it all the time. Yes, it is, but there's a very interesting story around that. So we'll get into that, the 77th Brigade, and much more with Spiro. And he has got one hell of a story to tell about Shane McGowan, the lead singer of the Pogues. A Christmassy type story. We'll get into that with him a bit later on as well. And as usual, I look forward to hearing from you via Twitter. My Twitter handle has changed. It's at one, that's the number one, at one Richie Allen, at one Richie Allen. Just send me a tweet today and I'll be delighted to hear from you. In case you're thinking, oh, what do you mean? You said something about, yes, Christmas morning. But that's a different thing entirely. I will be with you in 2 days' time on Christmas morning at 10 o'clock in the morning. And I'll be presenting a show called Christmas Morning Melodies for 2 hours. Got nothing to do with politics or news or any of that. It's just you and me having a bit of a chat and listening to some great music, okay? Christmas Day. Right now, though, lot going on. The Health Secretary for the UK, Matt Hancock, briefed the nation from Downing Street at 3 p.m. this afternoon, flanked by two women. Susan Hopkins was one of them. Doesn't matter, really. Every one of the scientists who take turns in these briefings are serial liars. In my opinion, that is. Their names no longer matter a damn. Hancock told the Downing Street briefing that the old tiering system was not good enough to control the new variant of the virus. Remember, a couple of days ago, remember, they said they found a new variant of coronavirus and they said it's probably 70% more transmissible and it might spread through children quicker. And we're seeing it everywhere now, said Matt Hancock today. Cases are rising in some of the places close to where the current Tier 4 restrictions are. And we need to act. Here is Matt Hancock.
2020 has been a hard year. And it's ending in this festive period, which is going to be very different. After all the efforts that we've gone through to control this virus, and in many parts of the country, this virus is under control, just as we've got a tiered system in place that was able to control this virus, we've discovered a new, more contagious virus, a variant that is spreading at a dangerous rate. And I know that the vast majority of people watching today and across the country understand what we need to do together to get through this. And so today we're announcing further action within the tiering system, and also some further progress on vaccines and on testing. And I just wanted to say this before I set out the details of what we're going to have to put in place. I know that these actions have consequences. I know how difficult it is, but I also know that it is right to take the action that's necessary to control this virus.
Yeah, and just in case you're wondering which areas moved to Tier 4, they are Sussex, Oxfordshire, Suffolk, Norfolk, Cambridgeshire, Hampshire, with the exception of the New Forest and parts of Essex and so on. Hancock said other areas would move into higher tiers. Okay. So this recent variant discovered here, which they said is 70% more infectious than original COVID-19, and they said it might spread quicker in children. Well, that's not all. Hancock had news of a brand new, potentially even more infectious variant. Here he is, Matt Hancock.
The second piece of news I want to tell you about is some developments about another new strain of this virus. Of course, the fight against the virus is a global effort, and we're constantly vigilant and looking around the world. And as part of our surveillance, and thanks to the impressive genomic capability of the South Africans, we've detected two cases of another new variant of coronavirus here in the UK. Both are contacts of cases who have travelled from South Africa over the past few weeks. The Chief Scientific Advisor and the Chief Medical Officer and others met their South African counterparts over the last day. And we are incredibly grateful to the South African government for the rigour of their science and the openness and the transparency with which they have rightly acted, as we did when we discovered a new variant here. This new variant is highly concerning because it is yet more transmissible and it appears to have mutated further than the new variant that's been discovered in the UK. We've taken the following action. First, we are quarantining cases and close contacts of cases found here in the UK.
Yeah, he's a pathological liar. They cannot possibly have sequenced it. They cannot possibly have grown it. And they cannot possibly have tracked it to determine that it's even more infectious than the most recent variant found in the UK a few days ago. He is lying through his teeth. It's at this point that I stick in the disclaimer or the caveat, but I won't. This is not conjecture. This is fact. He is lying. He's lying. How convenient. New variant from Africa. South Africa. A new variant in the UK. Lots of different coronavirus mutations. Of course, any biochemist worth his or her salt, any biologist, any virologist, 2 days on the job or 1 week out of university will tell you that viruses mutate all the time and that it's likely that the coronavirus 19, if it existed, and I don't know that it did or it didn't, but if it existed, has already mutated dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of times. He is lying through his teeth. How convenient, because it sounds like we just might need a whole bunch of new vaccines. But fear not, you see, because the apparently wonderful thing about the brand new unique mRNA, that's messenger RNA vaccines, is that you've only got to edit the existing vaccine. You don't have to go off and develop a brand new vaccine, taking years to do so. No, you can edit the existing COVID-19 vaccine, change it very slightly, change a letter in it to make it effective against the mutation. And this edit can be done very, very, very quickly. Vaccines, 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 vaccines. That's what it's going to be in 2021. Speaking of vaccines, did the health secretary have any news on the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, which the MHRA, the UK's regulatory body, is looking at and deciding whether or not to approve? Any news on that, Matt Hancock?
And however tough this Christmas and this winter is going to be, we know that the transforming force of science is helping to find a way through. I'm delighted to be able to tell you that the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, developed here in the UK, has submitted its full data package to the MHRA for approval. This is the next step towards a decision on the deployment of the vaccine, which is already being manufactured, including here in the UK. We are, of course, continuing to deploy the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, which is being delivered now from over 500 sites all across the UK, and we're adding more all of the time and accelerating the rollout.
What is happening is the UK is under a form of psychological torture by its government and its scientific advisors. Constant terror and fear porn. And why are they doing that? Because they want as many people as possible to take not only the COVID-19 vaccine they're offered, whether it's the AstraZeneca one or the Pfizer one or the Moderna one or the Johnson & Johnson one, but they also want them to take more vaccines next year, more variant vaccines. That's what they'll be called, I'm guessing, variant vaccines. And they also want them to take the flu vaccine and everything else that they recommend people take as well. And yes, of course, this all goes to Agenda 21, Agenda 30. We know this. This is about transforming the way we live, turning the planet into a veritable prison. The technocratic revolution they want to roll out. The cloud, transhumanism. I totally agree with that. And all the evidence is there to show this is where this is leading. But take it step by step. Right now, terrorise people. Terrify them. Make them so miserable, so morose, so depressed, so ill with the worry and the fear and the jobs and the money and the finances that they'll scream for the vaccines. And that's what they're doing. Trucks have started leaving Kent, by the way. I know some of you are interested in this. 3,500 lorries, more like 4,000 lorries, have been stuck after France closed the UK border on Sunday over the UK variant of COVID. Do you remember that? When they announced the new UK variant, which I've just been talking about. Not the South African one now, the UK one. France said, "Ooh, we better close the border. We don't want that in our country." And that just properly screwed people up. Lots and lots of drivers have been stuck there. But they've been testing them with the lateral flow test, which takes a half an hour. And some of these lorries are now moving out of this temporary lorry park in Kent. Whether they're getting on ferries yet, these lorries, I don't know. If you've been watching Sky News and the BBC today, you will have seen some of the drivers getting involved with the police, clashing with the police. I can't say whether the police have been responsible for the clashes or the drivers. I haven't a Scooby-Doo, but it must be a dreadful situation for those drivers there. Maybe some of them are not immune. You like that? Maybe some of them are not immune to a little bit of black humour. So I'll play this for the drivers in Kent, and I hope to God that you do get home for Christmas. I really do. I'm not taking the piss by playing this. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford. I am the BBG. It ain't the BBC. This is Chris Rea. Lots more to tell you in a moment, and in about 20 minutes' time then, Spiros Skouras joins us live from Arizona. Welcome to your Richie Allen Show.
I'm driving home for Christmas. Oh, I can't wait to see those faces. I'm driving home for Christmas, yeah. Well, I'm moving down that line. Christmas.
is Rhea driving home for Christmas. The time is exactly... Well, it's 19 minutes past 5 this Wednesday, December 23rd. The very, very last Richie Allen, the radio show of 2020. What a year it's been, eh? Lovely tune, that. We've got some Scottish news, Yeah. Yeah, Jimmy Cranky is sorry. She's very sorry, is Jimmy. She was at a wake last week. Did you hear this today? You did. I'm sure you did. And at the wake last week, Jimmy was standing with some mourners. But to be fair to Jimmy, she was socially distanced. To be fair to the wee ginger haggis. But she wasn't wearing a mask.
You stupid, ignorant son of a bitch, dumb bastard! Jesus Christ, I've met some dumb bastards in my time, but you outdo them all.
Indeed. Indeed. After all the lectures we've had from wee Jimmy every effing day for months and months and months and months. With a little carrot-topped tosser standing behind a lectern, going on and on and on about the rules and the regulations. To be fair, though, Jimmy has given us some of our lighter moments this year.
And firstly, on Santa, I'm pretty sure if there are any kids watching, I know Santa, it will not be prevented from delivering your presents on Christmas Eve. Santa is a key worker and he's got lots of magic powers that make him safe to do that. So if he's having to do grotto appearances by Zoom, that's to keep you safe. It's not that Santa's at any risk. Santa will be delivering presents across the world as normal. And firstly, on Santa...
Lovely, Santa. And also, Jimmy blamed us for the second wave of the virus, remember?
But as we have released ourselves from lockdown, we've also released the virus from lockdown.
That's right. You see how it works? When we released ourselves from lockdown, we released the virus as well. We had a second wave. Anyway, Cranky was at a funeral, didn't wear a mask, and she was very contrite. So the pixie-esque little munchkin got caught without a mask. What have you to say for yourself, Jimmy?
I want to take this opportunity to say how sorry I am for my breach of rules that I ask all of us to follow every single day. I took my face mask off while briefly attending a funeral purvey last week. I'm sure everyone will have seen in the media this morning a picture of me without it. I want to be clear today that regardless of the circumstances, I was in the wrong. There are no excuses. These rules do apply to me, just as they do to everyone else, and the rules really matter. I am kicking myself very hard, possibly harder than my worst critic ever could. But more importantly, I'll be making sure I don't drop my guard again.
Yeah, Jimmy Cranky there, sounding very contrite in Edinburgh this afternoon. Anyway, Tony Blair was on BBC television and radio today. Did you see him, Tony Blair? The worst human being alive? I'd say so. He's up there anyway. I do hope when Blair goes to hell, Satan shoves a massive pineapple up his hairy hole every hour on the hour for eternity. Remember Little Nicky? Harvey Keitel as the devil doing that to Hitler, remember? That'd be just desserts for Anthony Blair. Here he is speaking to BBC 4 Today presenter Nicky Robinson, or Nick Robinson, whatever his name is. You know the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine needs two doses? Well, feck that, says Blair. Give as many people as you can a single dose. You'll still have some protection. Blair can't wait to vaccinate folks. He was on because he wrote an article for The Independent today, Tony Blair.
I think the reality is we're now in severe lockdown until vaccination. And I've set out 7 points today that I think the government should interrogate deeply if we are able to, because that would allow us to speed up this vaccination program significantly. So,
perhaps
for example,
the most striking one, if I could just pursue with you, we discussed earlier on the program, is the idea of only giving one dose of the vaccine. So effectively, you can double the number of people who get vaccines straight away. Now, on the face of it, people might think, well, hold on, don't we need the two doses?
Well, you do ideally need the two doses. But the question is whether the first dose, and then you've got a gap of several weeks, or it could even be more than that, actually, with the AstraZeneca vaccine. Does the first dose give you substantial immunity? And by that, I mean over 50% effectiveness. If it does, there's a very strong case for getting, for not, as it were, holding back doses of the vaccine, so that however many doses of the vaccine you get, you halve that for the number of people you're vaccinating, but rather, you know, make sure that, for example, if in January AstraZeneca's delivering you 10 or 20 million doses of the vaccine, you vaccinate 10 or 20 million people, because then you should get more vaccine coming on stream by the time you're ready for the second dose, and that first dose can give you substantial immunity.
Yeah, he's mad for it, Tony. He's mad for it. Do you know that Tony used to dress up as a woman and go cruising public toilets back in his uni days? Do you know that, Miranda? I say that with absolutely no fear of being sued for libel by Anthony Blair or his wife. That's a fact. Lucifer, if he's listening, it's very unlikely Tony Blair is listening to this, but just on the off chance, Lucifer is waiting, Tony. You do know that, don't you? What's going to happen to you is, if you've ever seen the end of Ghost... You ever see the end of Ghost when the bad guy is crossing over and all the spirits come from up underneath the ground to drag him down to hell? That's going to be you, Tony. Anyway, here's a bit more from Tony Blair. It gets interesting.
If there's a trade-off between saying a little less protection for the most vulnerable because they're not getting their second dose, but much wider protection for more people, is that a trade-off we as a society should accept?
Well, I think it's really worth digging deep to see if it's not a more sensible way of doing it, given that, you know, you will get more vaccines coming on stream. So you will in the end be able to give that second dose. But also, I think we've got to look at whether it's sensible to do this in a sort of somewhat inflexible by age structure. So I think you should give much more flexibility to local GPs and how they deliver this. I think, for example, there's a strong case for saying that you've got to focus also on the people spreading the disease, not simply the most vulnerable. And then I think one other point that I make is that are we really using every available piece of infrastructure that we could in order to accelerate the vaccination program?
Tony wants to turn every public building into a vaccination centre, more or less.
Program. So, for example, I can understand with the Pfizer vaccine, it's a more complicated vaccine. But with the AstraZeneca one, shouldn't we have pharmacies and others also being able to vaccinate? And shouldn't we be as a looking at this and saying, OK, if we had to vaccinate the...
He's choking on his own lies. That's what's happening.
The entire population within a period of a couple of months, if we've got the doses available.
Because vaccinate the entire population in a couple of months. I hope that whenever Tony Blair hears the Righteous Brothers singing Unchained Melody, he absolutely shits himself when he hears it. I really do. It's not a Christian. I'm not a Christian anyway. At least I don't understand myself to be a Christian. It's not the Christian thing to wish harm on anybody. But I wouldn't be wishing any harm on Blair because he'd be dead. I'm hoping that there is a place for people like Tony Blair. Whenever he hears that song, you know that Righteous Brothers tune, "Oh, my love, my darling, I hunger for your touch." He comes over in a cold sweat. What a bastard. Blair was asked about health passports, I think. This is very important now. This has been everywhere all week long. Health passports.
With biometric ID nowadays, there's absolutely no reason why you shouldn't have a biometric ID. And I tell you, the whole world will move in that direction. No, the reason for the health passport is that, this is what's going to happen. Believe me, within 6 months, there's no country that's going to say to you, you can come into our country unless we have proof of your disease status. So it will happen and we should get ahead of the curve. And that reminds me to make one final point, which I really beg the government to consider. We must make sure we have the best data systems in the world available to us, because collecting this data in one place on one patient record is going to be absolutely vital. Testing, vaccination, every single thing to do with the development of this disease, because not just with this mutant strain that's here in the UK, but particularly the most worrying one is the thing that's happening in South Africa with that new strain. You need to record every single piece of data you can lay your hands on.
Are you listening to this bastard now, this psychotic scumbag? They want your health passport to contain every... You can't say mineable, can you? They want to mine every bit of data they possibly can on you. Everything. I joked yesterday about STDs. I made a gag about STDs on your health passport. It'll have everything about you on there. Every treatment you ever received for anything. Your vaccination information. When did you last have the vaccine? Have you had the Daddy Long Legs COVID variant vaccine? Have you had the South African version of the vaccine? We found a new strain in South Korea. South Koreans are coming in and out of the UK all the time. Have you had that vaccine? Remember, the mRNA vaccines just need to be changed. This is what they say. I'm not saying that. I don't believe them. I don't believe a word out of their mouths. But they say we don't have to go and develop a whole new vaccine. No, we just change the message a little bit, the genetic code, and bang, we're ready to go again. We're off to the races. Blair is advocating a world where a central system will have at its fingertips every bit of information it is possible to have about you. Wow.
Hands on, because we will be adjusting our vaccination program as we go. And we may
we'll be adjusting our vaccination program as we go. Who the fuck is Tony Blair? When Tony Blair was Prime Minister, he wanted to introduce the biometric ID thing, didn't he? And he didn't get his own way back then. But I don't remember Tony Blair speaking about vaccines too much. I don't remember Tony Blair ever expressing any interest in global vaccination programs. Correct me if I'm wrong, but now he's all over it. We'll be changing our vaccination schedules as we go along. This is the future they envisage for us. Vaccines. Regular, and I'm not talking about one or two. They'll expect people to be vaccinated 5 or 6 times a year. And not only that, alongside those vaccines, they'll want you to be tested multiple times a year for other things. This isn't a conspiracy lunatic on a radio show just making it up as I go along. They're fucking telling you. If you're willing to listen to them.
The data you can lay your hands on, because we will be adjusting our vaccination program as we go, and we may even have to adjust the vaccines themselves.
Just in a word, if you could, it's the 23rd of December.
And Nick Robinson finds this very funny. This arsehole at the BBC.
We go, and we may even have to,
it's all funny to him.
Adjust the vaccines themselves.
Just in a word, if you could, it's the 23rd of December.
What's funny about that? What Blair just said. Anyway, what's his final question?
You are, in inverted commas, retired from politics. I sense your frustration. You want to be back in there running this.
I sense your frustration. You want to be back in there running this, said Nick Robinson, when really his response to Blair should have been, are you out of your fucking mind, you maniac? That's the natural response. Of course, a BBC journalist wouldn't get away with saying that. You could say, that sounds positively dystopian and James Bond villain-esque and quite evil and unpalatable and unlivable, Mr. Blair. No, Robinson just laughed and said, it sounds like you'd love to be in there with your arms, with your sleeves rolled up, running the fucking show. Well, he's still running the show, Blair, or at least he has some say in it. I always felt Blair was more than a puppet. There's something more to Blair, you know. Evil bastard, eh? Evil bastard. It's 27 minutes to the top of the hour. 10 minutes from now, the one and only Spiros Skouras, live from Arizona. Can't wait to chat with him. It is Wednesday's Richie Allen radio show with me, the BBG. Thanks to so many of you last night for pointing out you had the wrong date on last night's podcast, Richie. That's a very tired mistake. You know when you're winding down, you've done this yourself in your own job, when you know you're coming to the end, and of course by the end, I mean the end of this year, you're coming to the end and you're going to have your holiday, I tend to start making stupid mistakes like that, putting the wrong date on a podcast or forgetting to say something or whatever. You know the way it is. So that's what it is. I'm in great form. I'm looking forward to my break. I'm also very much looking forward to you joining me on Christmas morning at 10 o'clock UK time for Christmas morning melodies. Oh, I've got some beautiful music lined up. Beautiful music. Now, I'm not taking musical requests. I'm not. But I will be taking requests. So I look forward to you getting in touch with me, because you might want me to say hello to somebody that you know listens to the Richie Allen radio show. And you can do that on Christmas morning, on Friday morning, yourself. Send me the tweets. Drop me a message on Facebook and I will get through all of them. I won't forget anybody. That is an absolute promise. It is exactly 25 minutes now to 6 o'clock. We shall do this and then I'll be back with more chat. Don't forget Spiro.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Can I just say what an absolutely wonderful gentleman and human being Mark Bajerski is? And it's not because of his unwavering support of the Richie Allen Show, which I'm incredibly grateful for. It's not because of that. I know the man and he's been incredibly helpful to me personally in recent months and to others I know as well. He's just one of the greatest guys you could ever meet. An absolutely selfless soul in a time when we need as many selfless souls as we can possibly get. If you get a chance, follow him on YouTube, watch his inspirational, humorous, funny and informative videos on YouTube. Please do. And go to his website, markbajerski.com. He's a lovely, lovely bloke. I want to say hi to Patricia as well, to Ruth in Australia. There's so many people who helped me out. My great friends Paul Ripley and Hayden Hewitt, of course. Hayden was on the programme last night. I don't want to forget anybody now. There's so many people that weigh in with a bit of moral support quite often. Don't have to mention Jean-Ann, do I? Jean-Ann goes without saying. Jean-Ann did say to me, don't forget Klaus Schwab. And his quote, the quote, of course, the ultimate quote, your biological, digital, physical identity all in one. That's where they envisage this going. And, you know, there's a lot to be done, I think, next year. Rightio. Shifty Chicken. Debs, how you doing, Debs? Debs says, Richie, I saw a friend in Aldi today. The friend said he didn't recognise me without a mask. Me. I've never worn one. Him. That's what I mean. What the actual fuck, says Debs. How you doing, Debs? Hi to Faisal, hi to Darren, hi to Chris Morell, hi to Elizabeth. How you doing, Elizabeth? That's Elizabeth Allen, no, Elizabeth Ellen Young. It's a posh name. Elizabeth Ellen Young. How you doing, Elizabeth? Hi to Patricia Opulence. How you doing, Patricia? To Charlie Girl, to Proly, to Patrick Vadine, to Ian McKee, to Liz George, to Donkey, to Gaddafi, to Sam McCarthy. How you doing, Sam? To Rob Keynes, to Paul 39, to the lovely Dean Smith, whom I met recently with Cherise Burchett. How you doing, pal? I hope all is well at the care home. Hi to Matt in Massachusetts, to Sooty's Rehab, to Penny Mac, to Wendy, to Rob, I might have mentioned Rob already, to Stephen Baum, to Christina Mallory. How you doing, Christina? Mark Wilde, the great Tony Gosling, legendary regular visitor to this programme. What a man. Hi to Robbie, to Debs, and so on, so on, so on, to Scottish John, to Bass Ninja, that's Alan in Liverpool. Lovely to know you're listening to the last show of 2020. I'm back on January 4th, by the way, which is a Monday. Now, before we welcome Spiro Skouras back to the programme, I want to say a special hello to Mr. and Mrs. John Nichols. Are you listening, John? Is Mrs. Nichols listening? If you are, do drop me a tweet. John got in touch with me a couple of weeks back and he said, Richie, will you play me a song on the Christmas morning show? A song by Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac. And I'm not one to be turning down people, but I turned him down. I said, John, right, listen, come here, I said. It doesn't fit in with the type of song and music that I'll be playing on Christmas morning. But of course, I'll fit it in before the Christmas break, and I'm a man of my word. Now, John Nichols made some wonderful memes in the last few years, putting me with Kay Burley and Samantha Fox and all sorts. Brilliant. He's a brilliant graphic designer, is John. And he's also a lovely bloke. So Merry Christmas, Mr. and Mrs. John Nichols. Here is Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac. And what's the name of the song? I think it's called Need Your Loving Now. Is that the one? Anyway, here it is. It is a nice song. It must be said. Back with Spiro Skouras, the one and only, in about 4 minutes' time. Had a bit of a brain fart there, or a brain freeze even. Need Your Love So Bad, of course, Fleetwood Mac. About 68, I think, 69. And as for Mr. and Mrs. John Nichols, Merry Christmas, John and the Mrs. Now, before we welcome back Spiro to the programme, and we've got loads of time to chat, and much time as Spiro has, he's not long out of the bed, I don't think. Hi to Angela Lambert. How you doing, Angela? Hi to Chris Clough. And Shona Dryden, an old friend of the programmes, is listening in South Africa now. She says, I miss this when I play catch-up. It's the music that you play which isn't on the replay. Yes, because I do edit the music out of the podcast. But I don't take any credit for that. That was John's call. Thank you, John. Do drop me a message and say hello. And if you want me to say hello to anybody on Christmas Day, wait until Christmas Day to tell me. Okay? Hi to Robin Deb. How you doing, Robin Deb? Apparently I'm making your afternoon. This is as bad as it gets. I don't know. Spiro is going to rescue this program. What do I need to tell you about Spiro Skouras? He's a very, very, very good and a very diligent and a very honest, independent journalist who does and makes terrific reports on his YouTube channel, which can be found by simply typing in Spiro Skouras. The reports are excellently produced, technically and factually, very, very good. And of course, he's working with activistpost.com now. Spiro, a huge, huge Twitter following as well. A lot of action going on there where he would post regularly information that he had gleaned from various official sources, but information that the mainstream media was ignoring. So he would get that stuff and put it out there. As long as I've been following him on Twitter, he never said boo, swore at, abused, threatened or harassed anybody when trolled, challenged, when he was called names. He would stay pretty calm and just say, look, this is the stuff, this is the information, it's up to you, whatever you do with it. Now, without any warning at all, the other day, his Twitter account was suspended permanently. Now, I know you might say, well, Richie, that's not new. It is newsworthy because of what's happening and because of what's meant to happen from here on in. We're going to talk about that now. And a little bit later on, he's going to share, I think, Spiro, one of the best anecdotes I've ever heard in my life. We're going to hear that a bit later on. I'm looking forward to that. Let's welcome back to the programme the one and only Spiro Skouras, who, by the way, doesn't make a cent, doesn't solicit donations, has his own full-time job, and it's in his spare time that he does his independent journalism. He ain't in it for the plaudits or for the money. Got to put that on the table as well. Welcome back to the programme.
Hey, Richie, it's great to be back. Thanks so much for having me on. And I'm honored, as always, to be on your show, especially for the last one of the year. You know, I'm really looking forward to this. Thank you.
Not at all. I really enjoyed catching up with your dad the other evening as well. Great guy.
You know, he's a regular listener to the show. I don't think either of us really ever miss a show. And so, you know, we both enjoy it very much. And being able to interact with the show the way you provide that opportunity is amazing. I mean, I think the viewership really enjoys it. You know, you regularly have the call-in lines. People can message you throughout the live show on Twitter. And, you know, you have a fantastic audience that I really appreciate as well.
Thanks, mate. It's nice to have live, isn't it? I mean, what you do is splendid and it's outstanding, and you can share that with people. It's magnificent. Those reports you've done all year long, the phone calls you made to the police, that phone call you made to find out about Ghislaine Maxwell, it's great stuff. The doctors you've interviewed, it's brilliant. And I think what fits alongside that nicely is a nice live show where you get the chance to put people's comments out there in real time. Now, tell me about that. What happened the other day that led to your Twitter account being suspended?
Well, was it last week, right around the same time that the Pfizer COVID vaccine was being rolled out in the UK, the FDA had released a document examining the data from the study of the Pfizer COVID vaccine. And they had actually pre-released it 2 days early. And so I was reviewing that information and doing other research and was planning on publishing a very important report concerning what was found in the study. And, you know, the vaccine, the Pfizer study also included information, for example, of people who died during the trials. There were two people in the vaccine group that died, and there were four in the placebo group that died. And of course, Pfizer says that they were able to determine that the deaths had nothing to do with the experimental vaccine trials. And apparently the FDA was satisfied with that because they didn't really question that. Now, some of the other information in the document, which I forwarded you and you played it on your radio program, included adverse events that people had experienced throughout the trials. And one of the conditions that was reported was Bell's palsy, which is a neurological disorder that paralyzes people's faces, for example. Like it would be like if someone had a stroke and half of their face drooped down or became stiff. Now, all four of those who had this condition developed it during the trials, and all four of them were in the vaccine group, zero in the placebo. But again, Pfizer was able to make the determination that this was not significant because if you do the math and the ratio of the people that were in the study compared to the general population, they were confident, or they stated, I should say, that that is consistent with the normal people who would get Bell's palsy. So again, completely dismissed. So now that information, typically when I'm compiling a report, especially on breaking information, I kind of sit on the info until my report is published, and then I'll promote the heck out of it. But this was so important because the vaccine was literally being rolled out there in the UK that I had to at least put that piece of information out there, and I had seen it. So I put it out there on Twitter, and again, I've been on there. I was on there for like 5 or 6 years or something like that, and had accrued a large following, over 70,000 followers. And that tweet went viral, and it was the most viral thing that I've ever done online in my entire career. And it had like over 20,000 retweets and over 11 million impressions worldwide, the last time I checked. And so that got a lot of attention, and I was able to pretty much watch that being injected into the narrative, into the discussion, worldwide, online. And so it had a significant impact. And it's not me. I'm not saying I'm great or my Twitter, No, it's the message. It's the information out there that people are curious about and seeking. And, there's links directly to the FDA document where it shows this, and I included screenshots, but I also included an image of the condition of Bell's palsy with it. Now, shortly after that, I had seen AFP publish a report, like a fact-checking type of report, saying that the information and images of Bell's palsy circulating online on both Twitter and Facebook is misleading, and they referenced my tweet in particular amongst a couple others, and they tried to play it off, essentially saying that it was, don't pay no attention to this because the image that was used, that I used in the tweet, was not of the actual participants of the trial. Now, of course, it wasn't, and there is no image floating around that I'm aware of the participants of the trial. And even if there was, I would never publish the actual people, their pictures on the online, for their privacy. I mean, this was meant as an example of the condition itself. So, shortly after AFP had published their report, Twitter came out and made an announcement that they were going to begin removing next week, which is this week now, they were going to start removing misinformation on their platform concerning the COVID vaccine. And so, I was thinking to myself, it's coming, essentially. Like, are they going to take down my account and many other accounts who are concerned, who are raising concerns about this experimental shot? And so Monday rolled around of this week, and my account was in fact suspended without warning. And so I was kind of left wondering, and you feel free to jump in anytime, Richie, but I was left wondering at that point, well, was it because of that viral tweet? Was it because of the other tweets that I've put out concerning, the vaccine and everything like that? But that one in particular, because you kind of want to reflect and be like, was that the one that, yeah, that broke the camel's back? So about 12 to 13 hours later, I ended up receiving an email from Twitter stating that my account was suspended and permanently, that that the guidelines that I had violated, which led to the suspension, were that I had was managing multiple accounts for abusive purposes, and that if I tried to open up a new Twitter account to go around the suspension, those accounts would be suspended as well. So I take that as a lifetime ban, essentially, on Twitter.
Yeah, and that's an astonishing thing, because there's no basis in reality. You don't have multiple accounts. You didn't use multiple accounts to troll anybody. You used your own account to put information in the public domain that had... That you'd been able to get through your own research, but from official sources. What you'd put out there about the adverse reaction to the vaccine and the palsy, the deaths, that was all real. It was all true. And as you said, that tweet went bananas. 20,000 plus retweets, probably several million impressions. And on the week that they said they would begin to take down what they call misinformation, the very week on day one, your account gets taken down, and they don't say to your face that it's because of COVID or vaccine misinformation. They lie and say it's because you've got sock accounts and you're using those. That's totally untrue. And to the best of my knowledge, you or anybody else, you can't get into a discussion with them in terms of asking them to show you those accounts or to say, well, no, I've only got the one account. You can't really get into a chat with them, am I right?
Well, they don't exactly have a customer service phone number that you can call up. I have submitted an appeal and other evidence that I'll get into here shortly. So, you know, I was kind of just thinking, okay, when I seen that response, well, that doesn't make any sense at all.
No, and, it's a lie.
You know, because of course you're right. I don't have multiple accounts that I'm managing, and I'm not out there bullying people for abusive purposes. It's just, I don't have time for that, and it's not appropriate anyway. So, it didn't make sense. And so I was, you know, thinking about it and thinking about it. And I had actually posted that email, on my Parler account. And, someone had replied to it saying that there was an account celebrating my suspension, and that it was the same one who has been trolling me. And so I got to thinking about it, and I was looking at it, and essentially this account, with at the time had, you know, a handful of followers and had been on there a couple years. This account had been trolling me for about a month. And I don't really, to be honest, spend a lot of time looking at notifications or comments too much. You know, I mean, it's time consuming. You can get down into rabbit holes. And plus, you know, I was getting a lot of notifications, so it was hard to keep up, really, honestly. But so the account that this person was talking about, they said that they were not only celebrating but congratulating, essentially, the Legion. And so I get to thinking, and then I remember the account that they were talking about. And just prior to being suspended, that same account had sent me a message saying, replying to one of my tweets saying, you know, when the vaccine works and everything goes back to normal, are you going to apologize, essentially? And or are you just going to be happy with all of the money that you made from spreading fake news? And so I decided to quote the tweet in response to it. And I said, what fake news? ? And I went on to explain that I don't receive any money from anything that I do online. I've had people ask, and I appreciate that. And they've asked how they can donate. And there's just simply no way, because I don't want people's money. I'm not interested in that. Like you mentioned earlier, I have a full-time job that pays my bills. So this actually cost me time and money to do. But anyways, my last point in my response was, if you comply, do you think this is all just going to go away? Now, I didn't really pay any other attention to it. And then it was shortly after that that my account was taken down. And, you know, I got to thinking that, you know, I have been seeing reports, for example, you know, well, like how could an account with a handful of followers, like six followers, bring down an established account that's been there for years with a large following?
I mean, this is where it gets really, this is where it gets really interesting now. This is the whole crux of this. Because we've heard a lot about the so-called 77th Brigade here in the UK. So a guy with six followers, and he's been around Twitter for a couple of years, and on another social media network, Parler, this guy is bragging about getting rid of you, and a term is introduced, the term the Legion, which is very interesting. And you're wondering, how the hell can a guy, a complete, you know, an anonymous troll, basically, who spends most of his time having a go at people, how can he bring down a established Twitter account that does nothing but post factual, provably, demonstrably factual information? I mean, if you are sharing an opinion, you share an opinion. And this is where it gets incredibly interesting, because you suspect, tell us what you suspect.
Well, the person who notified me about the celebration on Twitter and congratulating Legion was curious about that statement and inquired about it, according to their comment that they posted to me. And she or they, I don't know why I had the impression that it was a female, but regardless, they asked him, the other account, the troll account, who exactly is Legion? And he replied back, well, you'll have to figure that out on your own. And the way I understand it, there was a little bit of back and forth, and then there was a threat, essentially, that be careful what you say, or your account will end up like Spiro's. So, you know, I got to thinking about it, and I've been seeing these reports. For example, the World Economic Forum had published an article talking about there is no vaccine for the spread of misinformation. So yeah. It talks about what steps the United Nations and others are taking to combat misinformation online about COVID. And it states in there that the United Nations has established an army of over 110,000 volunteers to combat misinformation on COVID online.
Now, can I ask you this? I didn't know this. And again, it's down to your research. So the UN has 110,000 volunteers working to combat the spread of misinformation. In the World Economic Forum document or on the website, did it give any indication as to how the 110,000 would do that, or is it vague?
It is vague, but they do get into some of the partnerships, and they openly state that they are partnering with these social media platforms, or at least working in conjunction with them. It also does include other groups that are supporting this effort, including Soros-backed NGOs, which is no surprise, of course. But they do call them and refer them to as an army, which would, to me, imply offensive capabilities, yeah. Right? I mean, that's what an army, when I think of an army, I think of a war, and this is an information war. And so it's, and that was a published about a month ago on the World Economic Forum's website. And they specifically call them an army of 110,000 people. So who knows how many more they've been able to accrue in the last month. But they're not the only ones. As you mentioned, a military branch, the 77th Brigade, has an entire division of cyber warfare specialists, essentially, online combating COVID misinformation. And so the question is, well, how are they combating this information? Are they going around and posting, comments to something that may be misinformation, saying, oh, excuse me, sir, actually, please refer to the official WHO guidelines on this? You know, no.
Well, that would be fairly benign. But what I suspect they might be doing, and I'm convinced it is what happened to you, is that they're not benign. They may very well have created accounts with Spiro Skouras's name on them, or accounts that could look like they were being managed by you. And I'm not saying that did happen, but that's the sort of thing. I mean, this is new to a lot of people now, but it isn't new. It goes back a long time. The Israeli government has been running these types of operations for decades. You know, long before the internet, they were running interference, getting people to write letters to newspapers, complaining about people. They call it Hasbara, of course. I know you know that. You don't need me to tell you that. And I see that now. And I would suspect, Spiro, that if the United Nations, and I know they are because you've dug it out, are employing so many people, they say volunteers, but I would even question the volunteer aspect of it. I would not be surprised if students, particularly as students have more time on their hands now than ever, and they can't earn money working in hospitality, and they can't earn money working part-time jobs in coffee shops and what have you. I wouldn't be surprised if there is a financial inducement, and it's going to be young people doing this, there's no doubt about that in my mind, to go out there and to run interference against established accounts in the independent media who are, you know, with big followings, and your tweets often, I mean, your YouTube videos often get hundreds of thousands of views, which is massive. I can't tell you how massive that is. You know, some of the national radio stations in this country, their presenters are lucky if they've got 60 or 70 or 80,000, even 100,000 listeners to any daily programme. I've got more than that. And on YouTube, when you put a video out, your reports are very well made. Your production values are excellent. You're getting hundreds of thousands of views. I would suggest, and I have no evidence, they're paying students to do this, Spiro, I reckon. My guess.
Well, we can't rule anything out at this point. And, you know, and I want to emphasize that this isn't about me, and I'm not trying to say, oh, poor me, my Twitter account. There are a lot more important things taking place in the world right now than me and my Twitter account.
You don't even have to say that. You don't even have to say that. There's no sense of that. There never has been with you. I know that, pal. You're in it for the information. You don't have to say that. But it's huge because people need to look into this. And again, I have to say, I'm only guessing. I have no proof that they're paying young men and women to do it, but I suspect they are. And it's massive, this, isn't it? I mean, where is this going to go if left unchecked?
Well, that's right. I have seen this same account targeting others. And I'm sure, like, you know, if you, one person, whether they are from the 77th Brigade or, you know, the UN's army or whichever group, and I'm sure there are many others doing this, one person can manage multiple accounts, multiple sock puppet accounts. So they could even have arguments amongst themselves to kind of create a narrative or, you know, however they want. You know, it's part of not only cyber warfare, but psychological warfare. Now, if you look at, you know, my account was removed within minutes. I mean, it was not more than 20 minutes, and I'm not, maybe this guy was just a random troll, but to have that effect within 20 minutes to me raises very serious questions, because Twitter is supposed to prevent things like this from happening. Now, if you look at, for example, my Twitter account was followed, and I had been contacted in the past by the United Nations official spokesperson. So their official account was following me.
Yeah, I remember that. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, due to a previous report that I had done. So the World Economic Forum's official Twitter account had blocked me. And I was kind of surprised when I saw that, because I wasn't really trolling them or anything like that. But I noticed it because I try to keep an eye on them. And, you know, so I was definitely on their radar. And then that, coupled with the rollout of the vaccine and that viral tweet about the Bell's palsy thing, I mean, can we really rule out that my account was targeted possibly by one of these groups? It was certainly targeted either way you look at it. And I have the screenshots and the links where the guy is celebrating, and not only celebrating, but he says that my YouTube is next. Watch me. He's going to go after my YouTube next. So I had, I have appealed the suspension, and I have a case number with Twitter, and I have provided them all of the information and proof and evidence showing that this was targeted and that I was not managing multiple accounts for abusive purposes. But regardless, like you said, you know, I mean, Twitter, if there's a sensible person who looks at the information, my account should be reinstated in full immediately.
And hopefully it will be. You haven't heard anything back yet from the appeal, no? Not yet. It's too soon.
Not yet. It's too soon. It's too soon. So, but like you said, where does this go? I mean, you know, this is part of the reason why I wanted to talk about this, was not only because it was, you know, the larger story behind it and the implications of these covert operational groups that are maliciously censoring people, you know, through these covert means. I mean, that's very serious, but it's, you know, to get the word out to people to not engage with these trolls and to warn them, because I see them going after others.
Block them, yeah. I mean, none of us wants to really block anybody. I blocked some people recently, but only because I muted them and I kept seeing stuff from them anyway, even though I'd muted them. Just people being stupid, saying stupid things. I got fed up with it, so I blocked them, not because I was offended in any way by them, but I just got tired of it. Spiro Skouras is our guest. This is very, very serious. 110,000 volunteers, United Nations volunteers allegedly out there to combat to fight a war against misinformation online. Nothing reported on Twitter by Spiros Skouras was misinformation. It was factual information gleaned by him through researching these organisations we've been talking about. And I believe that if you had $5 to bet on what's going on here, it is that you've been targeted by this sort of operation, the 77th Brigade. The United Nations have no doubt about that. And it's funny you mentioned earlier on about the programme being interactive. Jenny just made a Twitter account to come on to tell me and you that several care assistants in Dundee have developed Bell's palsy. So my tweet while I was listening to you was obviously, can Jenny show me some proof? Send me a link. And Jenny says, no link. It isn't being reported. It's being talked about locally in Dundee. This is all hearsay now. Don't be offended, Jenny. I'm not criticising. It's just hearsay. My sister's best friend is a care assistant and she told us, a care assistant told us, says Jenny, there has been an incident or incidents of Bell's palsy in Dundee. I can't substantiate that. I can't endorse that. But she says it's not being reported. It's being talked about locally. There you are.
You know, that's fantastic. Thank you for, you know, the update. Always the viewers and the people out there in the communities are fantastic at gathering information. You know, I mean, they are an army, you know, as well, that an army that these groups are very concerned about. That's why they are establishing these, you know, brigades and armies and themselves to try to counter the narrative and push their own narrative. But, you know, we... another recent piece of information was a meeting that the FDA and the CDC and many others, HHS, and you know, all had prior to the vaccine rollout here in the U.S. of the Pfizer COVID vaccine. They were talking about the vaccine safety and their surveillance programs that they are going to have set in place to monitor for potential adverse reactions. And they show slideshows, multiple slideshows, showing a list, an itemized list of, you know, potential side effects that they're going to be watching for, you know, and they include, you know, death and Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is another debilitating neurological disorder that can paralyze you and is potentially even fatal as well. I mean, there was a whole list of, you know, they don't know the birth defects, the possible fertility impacts. They don't know how it's going to interact with people who are on other medications or who've had other vaccines. You know, they don't know how it's going to act with allergies. And we're already starting to see these other people. I mean, the nurse fainted on television live the other day. Well, you know, of course, she says that's a condition that she has pre-existing to this. But I mean, we're already seeing in the U.S. within the first week of deployment of this vaccine, over 3,000 people experiencing and reporting side effects. So this is a very real thing that the media has been changing their narrative, and the so-called experts have been changing their narrative. And now I'm seeing reports coming out saying that, well, if you get an adverse reaction, that's normal. That means that your immune system is working and it's actually a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, they're trying every which way to spin it to get you to comply.
And the news from the, was it the CDC or was it the FDA? You remind me, the news that in the States, they see 3,000 out of 100,000, they see 3,000 incidents that were significant enough for somebody to have to take time off or go to a doctor. That's 3%. That's just shocking. Who in their right mind would want to take that vaccine?
Well, it was the CDC.
CDC, you're absolutely right.
And that was just the first week. You know, they want to vaccinate millions of people. So if you just do the math, I mean, that's going to be a lot of people who are experience reactions bad enough to where they have to miss work or have to seek treatment. And, you know, we don't know. And that's just the short term. You know, like I said, we don't know what the long term effects are going to be for this experimental vaccine. And this is the largest mass vaccination campaign in history for a brand new type of technology, a brand new vaccine that's never before been used. And so they have no idea how it's going to react.
No.
And, you know, I believe that there's potentially a, you know, another agenda or multiple agendas attached to this that we can talk about a little bit as well. But this is something that, you know, I'm seeing. The governments initially were saying that they wanted to mandate it like Australia did. The people pushed back and they quickly walked back those claims and they went back to the drawing board. And it looks like they're going with the coercion that you've been doing a great job covering on your show and with your guests as well, your brilliant guests that you have, Richie. But I'm seeing a lot in the news more and more every day, you know, the question in the article being titled, you know, can employers mandate vaccines?
Yeah.
So this is very concerning to me, and I speak with colleagues that I work with.
As an employee yourself, my friend, let's not forget we talked earlier on about the fact that you have got a full-time job, and what you do in the independent media is not your job. You don't get paid for it. So, of course, this has implications for you when people start putting it out there. Can employers... I remember you sent me that link. You've done a lot of that over the years, which is great. When I'm on a live show, send me a bit of information, which is brilliant. Asking that question. And of course, by asking it, it means it's the desired outcome, isn't it?
Well, that's right. And at first, when this discussion began, it was a big gray area. And people didn't really know, you know, like what would be the liability that the companies could potentially be opening themselves up to if someone did experience an adverse reaction to the vaccine that they were forced to take in order to maintain their position at their jobs. You know, well, recently, I believe this was within the last week as well, the EEOC, which is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission here in America, updated their guidelines. And their guidelines clearly state that, yes, employers can mandate vaccines because they are it is the employer's job, their duty, to provide a safe work environment for their employees. And they can and they should not allow, you know, any kind of a threat or a risk to other potential, you know, other employees. So they're saying that it's their duty essentially to do so. Now, this is extremely concerning. You know, and I've talked to certain colleagues that I have, people who have no intention to taking the vaccine, not because they're anti-vax per se, which is the label, of course, they all throw on you if you dare to even question, but because they're seeing the side effects happening already. They're seeing that this vaccine is being rushed through production like never before due to a virus we're told has a 99%+ survival rate if you're under the age of 70. You know, and so there's a lot of concern here, but a lot of people are also saying, well, but what can I do? Well, you know, what can I do? Like, you know, I got to feed my family. I have to pay the bills. And so, you know, this is like you mentioned earlier, they've been playing the long game to get us to be the debt slaves that we have become, many of us, to where, you know, we're under the thumb of this debt-based system of slavery. And so, you know, my answer is always to resist. You know, I mean, I truly believe, Richie, that this is a war on humanity right now. And this is the most critical point in humanity right now, because this vaccine and the agenda attached to this crisis, which I believe to be manufactured, has a very anti-human darkness included in it. And this vaccine, like you said, I'm no expert. I'm not a doctor or a scientist, but based on my research and based on the interviews like that I've heard on your show and others and the doctors and experts that I've interviewed, this vaccine genetically modifies your DNA down to the definition, which is injecting foreign, you know, DNA or RNA into a cell's nucleus and changing it. So this is going to, and you can't undo that. So, I mean, they literally want to genetically modify people. So that is going to, and like you were talking about earlier with the Great Reset and transhumanism.
Just before you talk about the reset and transhumanism, they've gone public and they've taken on the so-called anti-vaxxers. And they've said that the claim that the mRNA vaccine will in some way change your own DNA is a crazy conspiracy theory. They say that the mRNA vaccine won't affect your DNA. And that's something that Dr. Vernon Coleman was talking about on this program. But my own personal opinion is that maybe this one isn't designed to do that. But they have other vaccines in production, we know this, that might do. How do you respond to that when they say the mRNA vaccine won't in any way impact upon your own DNA?
Well, it's admitted in multiple studies. I had Dr. Andrew Kaufman, who has been on your show. He was a guest on my show, and this our topic of discussion was that exactly. Do they want to genetically modify you with this vaccine? And so I published that report, and not long after Reuters published a fact checking on that report and named Dr. Kaufman and myself specifically by name. And they brought on their experts to give their expert opinion, and which, of course, said, no, that's a fairy tale conspiracy theorist. It doesn't happen. So I ended up having Dr. Kaufman back on to discuss the fact checking report, to have to allow him the platform and the opportunity to reply, because they did not seek comment from either of us, of course. And I had no idea what Dr. Kaufman was going to tell me at the time. I was thinking maybe he was going to say something along the lines of, well, they're using semantics or word games and, you know, technically maybe this or that. No, he proved to me unequivocally by showing multiple different studies that the very definition of genetic modification is met by these mRNA vaccines. And when they talk about these mRNA vaccines, you know, reprogramming how your cells work and teaching your cells how to fight the virus. I mean, how do you think it's doing that? You know, not to mention the potential side effects and potentially toxic ingredients that are in a lot of these vaccines, and how these vaccines are being injected directly into the muscle tissue, bypassing your natural immune system, which is mostly based off of our digestive system. So, I mean, there is all kinds of things that, you know, that raises questions with me about this. But as far as I understand, yes, and like I said, I'm not a doctor or an expert, but based on what I have seen, the studies, I had seen the studies myself, I linked to them in that interview, in that report, and he showed it on screen. And that to me is
well, you absolutely did your job. You did your job. They say, oh, it's a crazy conspiracy theory. You put a credible doctor on the air, as it were, on your YouTube channel, and he said, well, here's information that contradicts what the pharmaceutical companies say. You did your job, and it's wide open. I'm prepared to accept. I would say to people, go to youtube.com, Spiro Skouras. You can find very quickly those conversations with Andrew Kaufman and others, and you'll see what Spiro is talking about there. Yeah, I just had to say that this is what they say, you know, this is what they say. But you've got people, and I've had people who say the opposite. Sucharit Bhakti on this program agreed with Kaufman in terms of that the RNA vaccine is a DNA-altering vaccine. At least I think he said that during the course of our conversation. If I'm wrong, I'll correct that later on. Spiro Skouras is our guest. I can tell you the time is now 21 and a half minutes past 6 o'clock. I'm on air till, I think, well, at the latest 7 o'clock. What I want to do now is I want to speak for 5 or 6 minutes with Spiro about where we think this will speed up next year. And then we're going to hear a song from the Pogues. We're going to hear the Salford song, of course, the Ewan McCall song, Dirty Old Town. After that, Spiro is going to have a chat and tell us his amazing story about Shane McGowan, which is very, very funny. And it's a great, great anecdote. I want you to hear it. And that's where we'll wrap it up. 22 minutes. It is now past 6 o'clock. So right now, you got Tony Blair. I don't know how much of today's programme you heard earlier on, but you got Tony Blair kind of, I suppose, telling us that which we already knew. The health passport is going to be a real thing, and the vaccines are going to be changing regularly, meaning you'll be required to take them. This isn't something, you see, I think guys like you and guys like me, we've been interviewing people over the years, and in those interviews, we were projecting down the road. You know, often we were talking about things that were, as far as we understood, were quite a bit down the road. This is not down the road. This is next month, isn't it?
Well, Richie, you know, I have to, again, thank you for the work that you've been doing. And when I first started my very first YouTube channel, which is now gone, you found me very early and had me on as your guest back then. And it's, you know, progressed into this. So, we've been talking and going on each other's shows for a while now. And this program that you're talking about has been going on for a while now. And I listened to the entire show prior to coming on, and I did hear that. And from what I understand about how the vaccines can basically be re-edited and programmed and kicked back out within a matter of weeks, they were saying about 6 weeks, and they're saying it's unclear whether or not the vaccine would have to go through the new the testing process again, or if they would be able to just roll them out without any kind of testing. So it's very concerning. But, you know, this we're in the middle of a transition right now based on everything that I'm seeing. This current system of control, you know, and, which is, you know, the dollar is the world reserve currency and everything like that. And the financial system, which is unsustainable and is being, you know, manipulated by the bankers, and this current debt-based system was never meant to last forever. It was meant to last just long enough to where the technology had caught up with the technocrats' vision of what they have in store for humanity. And they have been building this new global network for years, probably for a decade at least. In preparation for this moment in time right now, which, as you mentioned earlier, yes, it does tie into the 2030 agenda and the UN's Agenda 21 and their plans for humanity. Now, we've been seeing the merger of COVID and the lockdowns and the climate change. Remember, we've seen the reports of, oh man, you know, everyone's locked down, that sucks, but hey, guess what, emissions are down and this and that. So, you know, these two agendas are coming together, and eventually, you know, we'll probably see climate lockdowns. But no doubt about it, this new digital system and the digital health passport, the digital IDs, digital passports are going to, as you clearly pointed out, not only contain every bit of information about your health status and what medications and everything about you in that sense medically, but also your financials. You know, they're getting ready to roll out digital central bank digital currencies. These central banks have been working on them for years and years behind the scenes. Meanwhile, they were telling everyone in the public that only criminals use cryptocurrencies and that they would never even entertain the idea of using them. Well, I guess ultimately they were telling the truth, because the central banks and governments are the biggest criminals on the planet, and now they're ready to roll out their cryptocurrencies. So this is going to be the way I see it, based on all the research, everything I've been looking at and studying, this is going to be an all-encompassing new digital surveillance, digital system of slavery. It's essentially going to be the cherry on top of the international surveillance state, where they are looking to incorporate roughly about 2 billion people right now who are not in the banking system. They are unbanked or underbanked, but many of those people have cell phones. So, you know, how can that? That's a huge untapped market for not only profit and but control for this system. So, it's this digital ID is going. They're going to try to restrict and limit your every aspect of your life, including your financials and your ability to travel and move around or even work potentially or go to the grocery store based on this digital ID. It's going to have like, that's how you're going to buy and sell. That's how you're going to, get access to certain things. And this is we're witnessing the implementation phase right now, roll out essentially.
Yeah. And I suppose before we leave COVID for 2020, at least me anyway, and leave it alone. By the way, Spiros Kouras on YouTube, activistpost.com, sadly not on Twitter at the moment. Hopefully there'll be a bit of justice there and his account will be restored and given back to him. I look at the way you create your content and it's terrific. It's like a little 60 minutes. It's like CBS. It's very well produced and you got a great on-screen presence, you got a great voice, and I look at it, it's terrific. And I know that I produce and present a radio program that's the equal in terms of production values of any commercial radio program in the country, but yet I think we're asking people to entertain something that I think it's insurmountable. You discussed there with me an agenda for humanity that I know in my heart and I know in my clinical brain is real. It's true. Their own information shows us that this agenda is there and is meant to come to pass. But yet, getting even bright people to even entertain it, Spiro, it's very difficult. And it's not getting any easier. You know what? And I don't mean to end this section of the program on a downer, but what more does the independent media need to do than produce sound content with tip-top production values, using their own information, the establishment's own information? If that isn't getting through to people, what more can be done?
Well, you know, a friend of mine, we were talking about this last night, and he was saying that he believes they are winning the information war. But I tell you what, they are certainly concerned about the resistance. No doubt about it. Otherwise, they wouldn't be going through all of these measures to try to stomp out any resistance. You know, we have seen, for example, in Event 201, they were talking about even going to lengths such as limited internet shutdowns to try to squash and quell any conspiracy theories. So, you know, and now we're seeing in the news, you know, all these hacks taking place, and we see the World Economic Forum warning us of a cyber pandemic taking place. So, you know, I think that 2021 is going to hold, you know, some stuff in the future for us. But getting back to, you know, the future of humanity, this is a war on humanity. And they are saying this. The Fourth Industrial Revolution, which is tied into the Great Reset, the World Economic Forum, they're talking about a period of time where when they have access to people's thoughts and emotions, that they're going to need to build a safe construct for them to think and operate in. And, you know, that technology is going to be so ingrained in our bodies that we will not be able to distinguish or tell the difference between, you know, artificial and organic life. So, you know, this is, when I say this is a war on humanity, this is literally, they want to fundamentally change what it means to be human. And I know that sounds crazy when people say that, but this is their own words. It's on their own documents, their own videos, and it's very real.
Yeah.
And that's part of what I believe may be, you know, think about it. Why do these eugenicists, essentially, who are running the show, why would they ever want to genetically modify us or change our DNA in any way, shape, or form? You know, why would they do that? What would be the purpose for that? You know, is it really to help us against a virus with a 99%+ survival rate? You know, well, I have my doubts, but I think that it's leading towards, it's just one major step leading towards this transformation of humanity into this control grid that they have been building around the world that's going to be run on 5G, AI, and the blockchain. So, you know, what more can people do? Well, be prepared, be as self-sufficient and independent as you can from the system, and resist and push back and tell others. I mean, this is all, you know, this isn't going away if we just kick back and ignore it.
The time is now, right?
Yeah, the time is now.
The time is now. Spiro's not going anywhere. You've been listening to Spiro Skouras, YouTube.com. Go to YouTube.com, look for Spiro there, Skouras, and activistpost.com. We're going to hear, it's lovely because it's a song about Salford, but Irish men have been singing it since it was first sung, since it was first published, Dirty Old Town. We're going to play Dirty Old Town by Shane McGowan and the Pogues. And when we come back, Spiro is going to tell us about the day when two legends collided, Shane McGowan and Spiro Skouras. Here's Dirty Old Town when we come back, more from the great man himself. You are with the Richie Allen Radio Show, 28 minutes to 7 o'clock this Wednesday, December 23rd. Lovely. This is a bit nice and a bit special, we think.
Met my love by the gasworks wall. Dreamed a dream by the old canal. I kissed my girl by the factory wall. Dirty old town, dirty old town. Clouds are drifting across the moon. dirty old town. Dirty old town. I'm gonna make me a picture box, shining steel, tempered in the fire. I'll chop you down like an old Dutch train. Dirty old town. Dirty old town. I met my love.
Shane McGowan and the Pogues, Dirty Old Town. We'll cut it short by about 30 seconds there to give us more time. When did Spiro score, the Spiro score, I should say, when did Shane McGowan get to meet the Spiro score us? Tell us when it happened.
Oh, Richie, that's so funny. Thanks so much. You know, I love that song. That's one of my favorite songs by the Pogues, by the way. You know, and it's back in 2008, you know, and let me preface this by saying, you know, Spiro is a Greek name. I'm my half Greek, but I'm also the other half Irish. So I have a very special place in my heart for the Irish and the Pogues and for even the Richie Allen himself. So all kidding aside, in 2008, I was living in Seattle and my uncle was moved up there and was living with me as well. And, you know, Seattle is a great music city. You know, a lot of the, or at least it used to be, you know, it's become a hellhole now. But so he found out that the Pogues were coming to town. And so we got tickets and we went down and saw the show, and it was at this small little venue, and it was awesome. And, you know, it was typical Shane McGowan fashion there. And so shortly after the show, we had a brilliant time there. It was great. And shortly after that, you know, we were like, well, let's see where else they're playing, because they're on tour, you know, here. And we had seen that they were playing at the Voodoo Fest in New Orleans a few weeks later.
Lovely.
So we were pumped up and psyched up. We were like, let's do it. Let's go. You know, how awesome would that be to spend, you know, New Orleans, you know, being on Halloween in New Orleans and watch the Pogues. So we got tickets, and my uncle ended up getting a cold right before the trip. And he was sick, and he said, man, I'm not going to make it, but, you know, you just go ahead if you want, you know, whatever. And I said, okay, yeah, you sure? So anyways, I went down there by myself and stayed down at I believe it was the Sheraton, right down there, right off of Bourbon Street. And, you know, it was pretty wild for anyone who's ever been to New Orleans, especially on Halloween. You can imagine the atmosphere down there. And so I ended up getting ready. It was the next day, getting ready to go down to the hotel bar to grab a beer on the way to go see the Pogues, as any proper Irishman should do, probably heading to see, you know, the most well-known drinking Irish band probably of all time. But so I go downstairs to the bar in the hotel there and order my beer, and I'm sitting there and I look across the bar, and it was this big circular bar right in the middle of this gigantic lobby. And sitting across the bar, I'm like, is that Shane McGowan? You know, no, it can't be. So I called my uncle real quick to let him know. I'm like, you know, hey, I think I see Shane sitting at the bar of our hotel. And he gets pissed at me, and he's like, he thinks I'm messing with him because he didn't come.
Yeah.
You know, and he hangs up on me. And so I say, you know, screw it. Let me go over and just say hi. And so I walked over there and sat down with him, said hi, started talking, bought him a beer. You know, we ended up hanging out there at the bar and smoking and joking and having some pints for a while. And I was looking at the time, and I said, you know, Shane, I got to get going. I got to get to the Voodoo Fest to actually see your band play. Shouldn't you be going soon too? And as soon as I said that, his entire demeanor changed. It went from like a laughing, having fun, smoking and joking and talking, you know, to being like extremely serious, concerned and almost frantic, like, oh man, I got to get to the show. And so he asked me if I have a phone, and for whatever reason, I don't remember. It was 2008. I don't know if I didn't have long distance on my phone or something like that. So, you know, or international calls. So I said, yeah, let's run up to the room real quick, and you can use my room phone, and that's fine. International charges or whatever, I'll just pick up the tab. No big deal. So we go up to there. He's trying to dial numbers, and with, you know how it can be when you're dialing international.
Yeah.
It can get confusing sometimes.
When you're pissed as well. Yeah.
Yes, there's that.
Yeah.
So he can't get a hold of anybody. And I say, all right, Shane, let's just hop in a cab and go to the show. And he's like, okay, let's do it. But he asked if I had a change of clothes. And I said, well, sure. So I dumped out my suitcase onto the bed there in the hotel and pretty much just let him have his pick. And of course, he picked my favorite T-shirt and my favorite jacket, which is an honor at that, you know, at this point. But he put on the shirt, put on the jacket, and we hauled ass down to the lobby and got a cab. And we're on our way to the Voodoo Fest, which was this huge festival where there were dozens of bands playing on multiple different stages. And it was at this huge outdoor park, and it was beautiful. He started to kind of fall asleep in the cab on the way there. And then when we get there, it was blocked off because it was a major event. So you had to walk for, it felt like at least a mile in the sunlight during the daytime to get to just the entrance from where the cab dropped us off. So
lovely.
What's that?
Lovely. This is just lovely. It's just getting better and better. The cab drops you off. There's a mile to get to the actual gates. You've got a drunk Shane McGowan in tow to get him to his gig. This is world class, Spiro. What happened next?
So we're walking, and it is, you know, Shane looked like he had been out all night before and hadn't gotten a lick of sleep at all. And like you said, pretty much drinking the whole time in proper Shane McGowan fashion. And so we're walking, and he's not looking like he's doing too good. And and he looks like a rock star.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when you see him in person and stuff, he doesn't look like regular, like, you know, me, I could probably walk through a crowd of people and no one would pay attention to me, but especially him being from, you know, Ireland, being Irish and everything. I mean, he stood out here. He stuck out. So, we're walking and people are, you know, someone made a comment kind of talking trash to him, and he talked shit right back to him, you know, and we're going and it was such a long walk that there was actually a little stand set up for people selling waters and beers. And so we got some waters and beers, and we keep going. And
you
we
got some make, more beer. You got some well, more beer. This is world class. This he's well, late enough as it is. And you pass a vendor selling waters and beer, and you think it's a good idea, or he does, to get another beer.
I think we both wanted a beer, but I also grabbed us some waters too. And it was just a guy with a cooler basically hanging out right there. And
wow.
So, you know, so we got our refreshments and we continue our walk, and we finally make it to the gate, and, they have a checkpoint set up and there's sheriffs there. And they ask for our tickets. And, right about this time, we can actually hear the Pogues begin to start playing on stage.
No way. You actually hear the band kick into a song.
Yes. And and Shane at that point was like, his mission in life was getting to that stage. And he was like ready to charge and rush through security and the sheriffs and just get on stage. So I'm trying to explain he didn't have his tickets. Like, they're asking for his tickets. So he reaches into his pockets and pulls out two fistfuls of cash and, let's just say, contraband, and sets it on the table. And everyone standing there, myself included, our jaws just dropped open.
Listen, by contraband, you mean Charlie. Shane had a bit of Charlie on him. It's all right. We don't mind. He doesn't care. He had a bit of Charlie. He had a bit of cocaine, and he had fistfuls of money. And he looks a total wreck, Spiro. And you're standing alongside him, right? Wow.
Yes. And so everyone's just standing there, like, with our jaws down. It felt like a good long, you know, while. And then Shane looks down and realizes what he had done, and he grabs both fistfuls and shoves them right back into his pocket. And at this point, the sheriff's deputies are yelling at him that he needs to empty his pockets right now. And he's just standing there ignoring them, like just not even flinching a muscle, just flat out ignoring them. And they're threatening them to take him to jail. At this point, they begin to start threatening to take me to jail if he doesn't comply as well. And so I'm like, I start trying to talk some sense into Shane, saying, hey, look, you know, he didn't even have his ticket to get in. He didn't have his credentials to get in. And I'm trying to explain his band is on stage right now. He's the lead singer of the band. We got to get him in there.
Now, when you when you said, hey, guys, listen, this is the guy who should be on stage now, did any of them respond positively to that? Did somebody, right, so he should be on stage, or did they just look at you like you were crazy?
a little bit of both. But, you know, they at that point said, well, if he just empties his pockets and he still needs a ticket, but, you know, and I just happened to have my uncle's ticket with me that he didn't, because he didn't come with.
Yeah.
We bought two tickets to get in. I just had my uncle's ticket with me. And I said, here, we have two tickets. I said, Shane, just give him the eight balls and we'll go.
Give them the eight balls, Shane. Shane, give the nice men the eight balls of cocaine. This is brilliant. It's the best story I've ever heard. It's my second time hearing it. Go on. I can't wait to hear the rest of it.
And to my shock, he did. Richie took it out of his pocket, put it on the table. I threw the tickets down and they let us go in. And so, and now that frantic urgency of getting to the stage is like kicked in again. And Shane is, because you can hear the band playing. And so he's like ready to start running. And this is a huge outdoor park. Like I said, I think there was like six stages there. I mean, it was huge. And he was playing on the PlayStation stage, I think. So we're going, trying to get there in a golf cart shortly after comes swinging by just randomly. And I flagged it down and said, hey, this is Shane McGowan. The Pogues are playing right now on stage. We just got here. We're late. Can you get us? Can you drive us there? And they're like, sure, hop on. So we hop on these golf carts. And we're going, you know, max speed, which is about 8 miles an hour or whatever on one of those things. And we're finally approaching the stage from the back of the, you know, because there's a huge crowd in front there. And so they come around the side band entrance. And before the cart even comes to a complete stop, Shane jumps off of the cart and starts running towards the stage. And there are two security guards there at the stage entrance at the bottom of the stairs who grab him and are like, and he's trying to, like a football player, push his way through to get up on stage. And they don't know who this is. They just see some guy jumping off of a golf cart and charging them.
And he's not the most articulate fella in the world, Spiro, is he? Let's be honest about it.
Well, he had a mission and he was on that mission. And so, and I'm running and I'm chasing and I run over there and I say, no, he's in the band. He's the singer. And so by this time, people on the side stage notice the commotion and they're like, Shane, and they bring him up and he charges past all of them and just runs out onto stage. And at this point, Spider Stacy is singing and they're in the middle of a song. The Pogues are, and Shane runs out there and rips the microphone out of Spider's hand and rips his sunglasses off of his face and tries to start singing. And people with the Pogues off stage come and basically grab them and drag them off of stage. And they continue playing that song. And so they sit us down off stage right next to each other. And we're both breathing heavily and they're all of a sudden, like, these people start coming and giving Shane, you know, this and that, and he's giving him water and he had a booze and whatever else. And we're sitting there and basically they wanted him to wait till the next song began to go out there.
How professional of them. I love it. So he had to sit next to you like a pair of naughty schoolboys and wait until Spider got through the song before he was allowed back on stage. World class. This is fantastic.
And so when the song ended and Shane went out on stage, the crowd erupted like you wouldn't believe. I mean, the Pogues are great and I love them, but Shane is great too, and I love him as well. And I think a lot of those people there, I mean, they have a, you know, they're there to see Shane and the Pogues, you know.
Yeah.
So the crowd went nuts when he went out there, and I'm sitting there now on the side stage watching the Pogues and Shane McGowan, thinking, what the hell just happened? Like, I came here to, I should be down in the crowd with those thousands of people and I'm on stage. Like, so I'm just sitting there in disbelief at this point. And this woman comes up to me and starts lecturing me and yelling at me and telling me, what the hell, why, you know, why, where was he? Why didn't you bring him? You know, apparently.
Did she think that you were one of the crew, that you just taken him off on the piss? Did she think you were with the production?
She thought that I, because apparently the night before Halloween, which the night before the show, Shane went out to Bourbon Street with somebody or some people and was partying with them and ended up pulling an all-nighter and somehow got separated from them and wound up in my hotel lobby's bar. And so she thought that I was the guy that he was out with all night. And they, when I called my uncle, I forgot to mention earlier, he called me back after he hung up on me because he was doing some research and he found online there was a post saying, like, please help. Shane McGowan is lost in the most dangerous city in America.
Shane is lost in New Orleans. Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
So I didn't, you know, so then he told me that. So I was aware of that. And so I informed the woman that I wasn't the one he was out partying with. I was the one that found him and got him here. And her tone changed immediately. And she said, oh, well, is there anything I can get you? And I said, yeah, a cold beer would be great. She said, okay, just stand by, hang out. And so I'm waiting for a little while and hanging out and just enjoying the show. And they ended up bringing a whole giant bucket full of booze and beers and all, and on ice and all kinds of stuff. And so I ended up just watching the rest of the show and disbelief and everything. And
wow.
After the show was over, Shane at that point was so exhausted that they had to just pretty much put him on the golf cart and take him back to their tents. And so there was a two or three golf cart convoy of all of the Pogues, and they asked me to go with them. So I did, and I hopped on the golf cart, and we went to their tent that they had set up, and pretty much Shane went to bed right away because he hadn't slept. And but the entire band asked me, like, what happened? They wanted to hear the story of what happened and everything. So I just shared the exact same story with them that I did with you right now and your listeners, and they couldn't believe it, and they thanked me so much. They called me the 12th Pogue because I was from Seattle, and they had the 12th man thing up there with their football team.
Yeah.
I got pictures with them and everything, and I thought, you know, that was it for the show in that night. And so I end up going back to the hotel after the concert and everything. And the next day I was flying out, and when I get to the airport and get on my plane, I see Shane McGowan sitting on my plane.
He's on the plane. This is fantastic. You're going back home with a story that you'll be telling for the rest of your life because it's amazing. And the boozy bollocks is on the plane, Spiro. What was he doing on the plane?
He was just sitting there in the middle seat, and he's a big guy. You know, he's a big guy. And so he's sitting there in the middle seat, and I couldn't believe it. And we looked at each other and pointed at each other like, you know? And, so there's somebody sitting next to him in the aisle seat, and I go over and I try to politely, you know, request that the gentleman sitting there in the seat switch seats with me because I know this guy, and, I got to talk to him and everything. And he wasn't interested in switching seats. And so I even offered him, I had like 20 or 40 bucks cash on me, and I offered it to him just to switch seats with me. And he refused the money, but saw how much that meant to me. And so he ended up switching seats with me, which was great. And
brilliant.
So we end up sitting there talking, and all of a sudden someone pokes me on my shoulder from behind, and I turn and look, and it was Victoria Marie Clark, who is Shane's girlfriend. And I was not aware of this at the time, but she told me, no booze.
Did she? No booze on this flight. He's had enough.
Yes.
The long-suffering Victoria, by the way. So she was sitting behind you. Lovely woman, by all accounts. Very attractive woman, but also a very nice woman. And she said, you're not to buy him a drink.
That's right, because everyone always wants to drink with Shane McGowan. So, yeah. You know, and I said, yes, okay, of course, no problem. She is great, by the way. And so I'm talking with Shane, and then of course she's like, well, who are you? Like, how do you know him? And I said, well, my name is Spiro. And she goes, you're Spiro from Seattle?
You're the Spiro. Yes. She heard the story. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. So we have the flight, and, you know, Alan, Shane was kind of still recovering a little bit, and he kind of burped up a little bit of liquid, a little bit of puke, a little bit on my pants, and you know, just a couple drops, no big deal. It was Shane McGowan, and he said, you know, you could probably sell those pants for a pretty good penny, which, you know, just making a joke. It was pretty funny, just a side conversation. But we
the guy who gave up the seat should have given you $50. There and then, hey, thanks for getting me out of that jam, son. So he got sick after all you done for the fecker. You got him to the gig. And you know what's really interesting about this? He, as pissed as he was terrified of missing the gig. And I'm guessing, I know the band had many, many breakups over the years. I would imagine that they had a lot of fights, physical fights. He probably feared that they would give him a hiding if he missed the gig, or, you know, the consequences were pretty severe. He was that worried about missing it. Wow. And then he's on the plane, he gets sick on your trousers. Unbelievable.
And so, you know, it was a connecting flight from New Orleans to Dallas. And then from Dallas, they were going somewhere else, and I was going back to Seattle.
Brilliant.
And so they had organized a wheelchair for him. Dallas is a huge airport. And so they asked me, actually, I think it was Big Vic, they call her. They asked me to help them out with Shane. And I'm like, yeah, of course. And, you know, and she was calling me Shane's guardian angel at the time. And we get the wheelchair and he, you know, he gets in it, we land and I'm pushing him through the airport, you know, and we're talking and still, and they're so nice. They were inviting me to go stay with them in Dublin and everything like that. And
they would have meant that, by the way. I don't know these people, but I've worked in commercial radio long enough that I know some people who know these people. They would have meant that. If you'd have sent a message or an email, they'd have been right, absolutely, get Spiro over, and they'd have put you up, man. They're serious, these people, you know.
Very genuine.
Yeah.
Very genuine.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have enough nice things to say about Big Vic. She's amazing. And we exchanged information, contact information, and I'm pushing him through that to the airport. And I'm struggling to do so. I'm like, what the hell? I mean, he's a big guy, bigger than me. And I'm sweating. It's hot. And it feels like he weighs like 500 pounds. And by the time we almost get to the gate, I realized that the brake from the wheelchair was still on. So that's why it was so difficult.
The brakes were still on the wheelchair. Christ almighty Spirit. It's this story that keeps on giving, you know.
Oh, man.
It is absolutely, it's the best I've ever heard. Go on then. So you push him to you get to the part. Well, you've gone through and they're about to move on. What happens?
And that was pretty much, we said our goodbyes like I said, exchanged contact information and we went on our separate ways. And to this day, my uncle is kicking himself that he didn't come with, for the show. But at the same time, we wouldn't have had that extra ticket for Shane to get into his own show if he did.
I love it, Spiro. I love the fact that law enforcement in the United States gets a very bad rap. But rather than haul the guy in to the cooler because he had a couple of 8 balls of Charlie in his pocket. I'm saying Charlie as if I know anything about cocaine. I've never taken cocaine or anything like it in my life. I was surrounded by it in Spain, but I never went anywhere near it. Fair play to them for just overlooking that and letting the two of you in. You could have ended up in a kind of a, what was the name of that film? Midnight Express, Spiro. You and McGowan could have been in a jail cell somewhere. But fair play to them, they left you into the show.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. That, like I said, just the look on everyone's faces and my face as well, because I wasn't expecting that. We were hoping he would pull out a ticket from his pocket to get into the show. And to their credit, I mean, they it was just amazing. The whole story and experience seems surreal, even looking back, you know, 12 years later. But it was a wonderful experience that I'll never forget. And thank you, Richie, for allowing me the opportunity to share it with everyone.
Not at all. When you told me several months ago, what did I say to you? I said, listen, we're going to tell this on December 23rd. It's a beautiful story. There's such humanity in it and decency and kindness. It's wonderful, really. And I laughed out loud when I'm laughing today listening to it. It's brilliant. I mean, it's one of those things, even if you wanted to make it up, you couldn't make it up. Getting to the terminal, getting on the plane and seeing the big bollocks on the plane. I mean, you must have just laughed out loud when you saw him. And he is such a character. You know, I know he grew up in London, but He's as Irish as the Irish themselves. He's loved in my country because he's a stone cold genius. He really is. And I don't know how he's alive, Spiro. I don't think anybody does. I think these scientists that are lying through their teeth about coronavirus, they could spend a bit, you know, spend their time a bit better. Stop terrorizing people, end lockdowns, and go and study Shane McGowan, you know. How is he alive, Spiro? Have you any idea?
No, but he truly is a special person, and I have nothing but love and respect for him and Big Vic, and as for you, Richie, as well. I have nothing but love and respect for you, and you know, I really appreciate your show and all of the viewers, and you know, I hope and wish everyone happy holidays, and just, you know, we have to not give up hope or faith and not submit to this tyranny that is being imposed upon us, because it's not going to go away if we just ignore it.
Absolutely right. And that love goes right back across the pond to you, Spiro, and to your dad and to your family. Same to you. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you. And I have no doubt in January we'll pick up this conversation again. Thanks for giving us your time today. I know you're knackered. I know you're coming to the end of your own shifts before your own holidays, and you still got up out of bed and came on here. And if you do get a chance later on to look on Twitter, even though your account isn't active, I know that, you'll see massive reaction to the story. It's really cheered people up. A lot of people smiling today. Godspeed, my friend. Speak to you again in January, and thanks for everything.
Thank you very much, Richie, and thank you everyone out there. Happy holidays.
Thank you, Spiro, the great Spiro Skouras, closing out the Richie Allen radio show for the year 2020. I won't say much more, except just a couple of quick things. To anybody who's supported this radio show financially in 2020 or in any other year, I'd love to be as loquacious as my great friend Jean-Anne Crowley. I'd love to be able to speak like her. I'd love to be able to convey how much it means to me. I sometimes sit up in the night. I'm an insomniac. I don't sleep. And I think about how remarkable it is that people actually say, excuse me, the old voice is going now, is that people say to themselves, I'll send £3 a month or £5 a month or £10 a month to that radio show. I can't tell you how much that means to me. So I won't even try. Just believe me that it does mean an awful amount to me. To everybody that knows me either personally or knows me through the show, look after yourselves over the Christmas holiday. Give somebody that you love a big hug. Don't get too bogged down with everything that's going on. Try and take a break from it. We'll pick it up. It'll be waiting for us in the new year, won't it? It will. I'll be back with you on Christmas morning at 10 o'clock. We will not be talking about anything related to what's in the news. Not a thing. We're going to listen to some wonderful music. I might have one or two stories. They won't be anything like Spiro Skouras's amazing story. But we'll chat about a few things, me and you. We'll listen to a few tunes and we'll spend a little bit of time in each other's company on Christmas Day. Alrighty. So that's it for me. I suppose I should thank the amazing, if Victoria, or Big Vic, as she's known to Spiro and Shane McGowan's friends, if she's long-suffering, so is the oft-mentioned Caroline Tisserant, the future Mrs. Allen. Without her, there wouldn't be any radio show, because she suffers it. The long hours of me in the studio, of me whiling hours away, researching stuff, listening to stuff, and it does sometimes impact on our relationship, but nobody supports it more than she does. So I'll make this dedication to her. Ah, oh, Jesus. Merry Christmas. There's only one song to play, and here it is. I love you. I'll see you Christmas morning at 10. Bye. Until then. Bye now.
It was Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank. An old man said to me, won't see another one. And then he sang a song, the rare old mountain tune. Turn my face away and dreamed about you. Got on a lucky one, came in 18 to 1. I've got a feeling.
strange country.
Dreams around.